podfic of The Pirate Prince, a Goblin Emperor fic by Imaginary Golux, read by Caecilius in Horto. Like everyone else in the Unthelonese court, Xethero is immensely curious about the new emperor. His tale sounds like something out of a storybook. An unwanted archduke, kidnapped by benevolent pirates and raised as one of their own, now returned in triumph to take his rightful throne. Xethero might have been more willing to take the romance of the tale at face value if she and the rest of the Unthelonese court hadn't all just lived through what is starting to be called the Tethymedasia coup. That, she is quite sure, would be enough to make the most naive and gullible woman a little bit jaded. Xethero spent 3 days in grateful prayer when Paru Tethymen was chosen for Varinetchable V's empress instead of her. Her father thought she was grieving her chance to rule. Well, that was before the whole disastrous, treasonous mess of it came pouring out. He still thought that Varinetchable V was anything but a figurehead. Xethero figured out something was wrong rather earlier than her father because she was friends with Videro, which means she noticed when Videro stopped writing, stopped visiting or accepting visitors, stopped appearing in court at all. Xethero knew the Tethymada were bad news and couldn't do anything about it. Now, though, she has no idea whether the new emperor will be good news or bad news or just strange. She doesn't even know his reign name. Nobody does. All she knows is what has become common gossip in the day since the airship returned, carrying him. He is Varinetchable IV's youngest son by his fourth and least regarded wife. He was kidnapped from Adonimi some months after his mother's death by his aunt Shallion, who is a pirate, possibly a pirate queen, the rumours aren't quite clear, and raised by her in Solony over the water. He is half-goblin. A few people claim to remember seeing him years ago at his mother's funeral, but a grieving 8-year-old is hardly a good measure of a grown man, much less one raised by pirates. Xethero knows, without any particular pride, that she is one of the best choices for the new emperor's bride. Paru is dead. Lauren Duchenin would have been in the running back before Lord Chancellor Chavar died, but isn't any more. And though there are an abundance of noble women who would like to be empress, of those near enough the new emperor's age to make a decent match, Xethero is head and shoulders above the rest of the pack. And her father would cheerfully marry her to a barbarian from the Evresi steppes if he thought it would profit him politically. Well, maybe not cheerfully, he does love her, but he'd still do it. So Xethero is a bit nervous, which makes her sharp-tongued and twitchy when the news goes out that his serenity will be presented to his people in the Unthelion at the third hour afternoon. She and her family get there early, of course, everyone does, and take their place as close to the throne as they can without stepping on anyone's literal or metaphorical toes. Xethero stands as still as she can, running through dance steps in her mind and wishing she was allowed to carry a sword. She always feels a little better when she has a sword at her side. Lord Berenar has, somehow, ended up announcing the Emperor. Xethero wonders what sort of negotiations resulted in that. He does it well, though, his voice sounding throughout the entire vast Unthelion. His Imperial Serenity, Edrahasivir Jaz, 7th of that name. Edrahasivir Jaz is very tall. That's Xethero's first thought, even before she notices how dark his skin is, seeming near black against the white on white of the Imperial garments. The tailors must have laboured all night to clothe him. She thinks he might be taller than his father was, and certainly none of Verinichable the Fifth's clothing would fit him. No one will ever know how tall Verinichable the Fifth might have been had he reached his full height, and Xethiro spares a moment to send a quiet prayer to Iulus for the young emperor's soul. May it have the peace in death he did not find in life. Xethiro is close enough to say that Edrahasivir Jaz does have the Dresredazo grey eyes, startling in his dark face. There are pearl and silver studs in his ears. His hair is longer than hers, a beautiful black wavy mess like a storm cloud, decorated with pearls like stars. He looks... well, he looks a little overwhelmed, honestly. But he holds himself well, tall and proud, and he speaks in a voice that must have been trained to carry over storms and the creaking of ships, clear and loud, without seeming to shout, and rather pleasant to listen to. "We greet you," he says solemnly. "We know we must be strange to you, as indeed you are strange to us, but we pledge that we shall do our utmost to bring stability again to the Athivaras, and to reign with wisdom and compassion over all our people." Xethiro thinks that he must have written that himself. There's no way any of the surviving members of the Korajas would have included compassion in the list of vital attributes of an emperor. She's a little taken aback that a pirate thought of it. Maybe her long-quashed romantic dreams of a dashing pirate prince are a little less foolish than she thought they were. Edrahasivir Jaz is coronated a week later, and takes the pledges of all his lords. Xethiro does not pledge to him, of course. A daughter offering her fealty in her own right? Unheard of. But she watches from the side as her father goes to his knees before the emperor and speaks the formal words, and thinks that she is maybe a little impressed by the attention Edrahasivir pays to each of his lords, great or small, powerful or insignificant. The day after his coronation, two letters arrive at the Keredada apartments. One is for Xethiro's father, and the seal is a cat with a fish's tail, odd and strangely elegant. A Drashada seal, for an emperor who is half goblin, half Sevrach Seked, half, or more than half, a pirate. Xethiro looks at the letter lying beside her father's plate at the table and knows what it must say, and swallows hard against her nerves. The other letter is beside Xethiro's plate, and it has Vedero's seal, a cat holding a pen. Xethiro hasn't seen anything bearing that seal in almost a year. She picks the letter up in hands she will not allow to tremble, and opens it carefully, brushing her fingers over the seal as though to check that it is real. The handwriting is Vedero's, though it is shaky, as though Vedero has not written much in a long time. "Our dear Xethiro, we are hosting a very small luncheon at 1 this afternoon, for friends we have not seen in some time. We would be pleased by your presence. We have new apartments, near the Alkef Meret. We are sure any page will be able to direct you. Vedero Drazhin." Xethiro's eyebrows and ears go up in shock. Drazhin? Vedero has been Tethimaran since her marriage. It's almost unheard of for a family to take a daughter back. It would have had to be the new emperor's doing. Someone must have mentioned that the traitor Tethimar's wife was his half-sister, was innocent of any wrongdoing, and he must have gone out of his way, in the week between his arrival and his coronation, to arrange for the paperwork to be drawn up and the proper rituals observed, and the marriage annulled, so that Vedero could be Drazhin again. Wisdom and compassion. Xethiro's starting to think those weren't just empty words. Her father opens his letter very carefully, scans it twice, and nods. "We are to attend upon the emperor at 4 this afternoon," he says, using the plural and looking right at Xethiro. "Thou knowest what this must be about." "I know, father," Xethiro says. "I shall do my duty." Her father nods, and Cethero escapes the table to figure out which outfits she wants to wear for a luncheon with the Emperor's reclaimed sister, or an audience with the man she's probably going to marry, assuming her father doesn't demand something absurd as a betrothal price. Federo looks thin, and her hands are strangely scarred when Cethero takes them, but there's a light in her eyes that makes Cethero smile nonetheless. There are four other women there, all of them Federo's closest friends, and Cethero is flattered to be counted among them. And the first part of lunch is entirely the sort of quiet gossip which might pass as conversation at any meeting among noble friends. Once the plates have been cleared, and they're all lingering over tea and thin cookies, though, Miro, Videro's friend who specialises in translating Barragese poetry, says, "Federo, darling, what happened?" Videro lifts one hand in an elegant gesture of bafflement, and now that Cethero's looking, her fingers are a little crooked, like they've been broken and healed wrong. "Tethymar happened, demons eat his soul," Videro says. "And then Idrahasivar happened." She looks at Cethero then, and her eyes are grave. "That is part of why I asked thee today, Cethero, beside my friendship for thee. Thou must know that my brother will ask thy father for thy hand." "I had guessed," Cethero says, steadily. "I wish to reassure thee," Videro says, reaching across the table to pat Cethero's hand. "I know 'twill not occur to thy father to wonder, but I wish to tell thee that my brother Edrahasivir is kind." Cethero nods. She had begun to guess at that. It is no part of any sly political plot to reclaim one's sister and install her in very nice apartments instead of relegating her, or worse. And that Edrahasivar has done so for Videro in the first week of his presence is quite a statement. But it could so easily have been simply care for his blood kin. Even very cruel men are sometimes kind to their own blood. "What else canst thou tell us of him?" Miro asks gently. Videro considers. "I have spent but little time with him," she says at last. "But he has taken for one of his Nahacharai a Nahacharo, a female Nazar, and he calls all his servants by their names." Cethero rocks back in her chair a little. "A Nahacharo? That is absolutely unheard of, rarer even than reclaiming a daughter from a failed marriage." Suddenly she is looking forward to this afternoon's audience. She wants to know what man this is, this pirate emperor, this Drajar raised so far from court, to whom wisdom and compassion and kindness are more than empty words. The audience is in the tortoise room, not the Anthelion. The emperor is never alone, but this is as close to private as Cethere thinks such an audience can get, far more private than she really expected. The emperor himself, of course, tall and lean and imposing in his white silks. His secretary, seated at a desk and looking properly expressionless. His Nahacharai, Cethero is a little disappointed that the Mazar is male, standing at his shoulders, looking almost as blank as the secretary. And Lord Berenard, the new Lord Chancellor, standing by the fireplace. Cethero's father bows, and she curtsies. Edrahasivar inclines his head quite politely. Lord Berenar steps forward to begin explaining why they're here, as if both Cethero and her father didn't know that perfectly well. And Cethero ignores the talk of contracts and betrothal prices in favour of studying her probably about to be betrothed. He's apparently listening intently to the negotiations, but after a minute he nods a little and sits back and looks at her. He's quite open about it, neither shy nor over-familiar, and so Cethero looks back without flinching. There's a scar on his cheek, faded but just visible from close up. His ears have more piercings than she'd realised, 5 each, and there are tiny black pearls in most of them, blending in with his dark skin. His hands are calloused and clearly strong. his shoulders broad. He's handsome, actually. He'd make a good pirate prince in an opera. And though she's heard some people muttering about his goblin heritage, it sets off the white silks nicely. The contrast is striking and intriguing, and the white doesn't wash him out the way it sometimes did his father. The Dragidaise grey eyes are keen and startling. Grey as the storm over the sea, Xethere thinks, and then snorts at herself for getting fanciful. Lord Berinar and her father finish their negotiations after about half an hour, shorter than Xethere expected. But then her father doesn't want to annoy the Emperor, and the Emperor speaks for the first time. "We would be pleased to speak with Dacosmin Keridan before the contracts are signed." Xethere wasn't expecting that. Neither was her father. Lord Berinar just looks sort of resigned. After a moment, Xethere's father bows awkwardly and says, "As his serenity pleases," and Lord Berinar herds him gently out of the room, the secretary following them. Xethere is alone with the Emperor and his Nehecherai, which is as alone as the Emperor ever gets. "We asked our sister about you," the Emperor says, which is not what Xethere was expecting. "She told us you were bold and intelligent and knew the court as we do not." Xethere can feel her ears heating. "She told us that you were kind," she replies, and Edra Hasivar's ears dip in surprise. "We are very glad to hear it," he says. "Our Aunt Vano would be very disappointed in us did we forget her lessons so far as to be otherwise." "We thought your aunt's name was Shalion," Xethere says without thinking. Edra Hasivar smiles. "Aunt Vano is our Aunt Shalion's wife," he explains, and Xethere doesn't gape, but it's a close thing. She does lose control of her expression when Edra Hasivar adds, "She is a lion woman from Anvernal, and had much of our raising while our Aunt Shalion was at sea." "That sounds like an interesting childhood," is all Xethere can find to say. "It was," Edra Hasivar says. "We quite enjoyed it, all things considered. Though it was Aunt Shalion who taught us to sail, and to fight." He pauses and then adds delicately, "Our sister mentioned that you were a talented swordswoman." The soldier, Nehecheres, twitches. Just a little. "We have some little skill," Xethere says warily. His next words are going to be forbidding her from swordplay, as it is unbefitting an empress. She just knows they are. "We would be honoured if you would consent to spar with us sometimes," says the Emperor. "We would be glad to do so, Serenity," Xethere says, so shocked she is surprised she can speak. "Spar? With the Emperor? With a trained swordsman, who might actually provide a challenge? Who might know different moves? Barigese or Anvernese? Or Pyractical, if pirates have their own style of fighting?" Xethere can barely rein in her excitement. The Emperor hesitates and glances briefly at the soldier Nehecheres. "We are to be married, Dacosmin Keridan," he says at last. "It would please us if, when we are in private, our betrothed, our wife, might call us by our given name." This whole day has been one shock after another. Xethere curtsies. "We would be honoured, Maya, and more so if you would do the same." Xethere, the Emperor, Edra Hasivar, Maya, says, and smiles. It's a crooked, cheerful, confident smile, and it makes him look, for a moment, every inch the dashing pirate of a romantic novel. Xethere smiles back and thinks, maybe this is going to work, because she's always wanted to be the dashing pirate, not the rescued damsel, and something in Maya's smile tells her that he doesn't want a damsel. He wants a woman who can spar with him, can fight beside him as his equal, with swords or words alike. Cethere's not going to have to tuck herself in a box, the way she's always feared she would when she married. Or at least not one that hides her from her husband. She'll have to conform to propriety enough to be a good empress, which will be its own hassle, but this is going to work. And more than that, it's going to be good.